And welcome back to Cottage Talk. This is a special episode. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Mike Gregg and Steve Woodyard. This is our end of the transfer window special, as we are recording this live during the final hour of the January transfer window. So we have much to discuss in this show. But before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Steve Woodyard, how you doing?
It's great to be back on so soon, Russ, and it's great to be on a show with not only yourself, but also Mike, which I think has been for the first time in a while, so it'd be good to get this going.
It will, my friend. It's good to have the two of you on to talk about what's been going on. We're forming the January transfer window, and I look forward to it. But before we do anything else, I have to welcome Mr. Gregg back. Mike, how are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, Steve. Yeah, doing well. Been a long day with work, and then half the day spent on Twitter, but it's getting near the end of that. So, yeah, no, there's a lot to talk about. A lot of players going out, not as many in as we'd probably like, but, you know, it should be a good hour and a bit.
It should, my friend. And listen, we're going to start by talking about a Fulham signing. It took a little bit today, but there is a Fulham signing, so I'm just going to read from the Fulham website, and then we can talk about it. It's entitled Syriac Signs. The club is delighted to announce the transfer deadline signing of Gohee Syriac on loan for the remainder of the season. The striker arrives from Belgian Pro League outfit KV Oostend with an option to buy at the end of the deal. Syriac began its career with his native Ivory Coast with ASEC Mimosas, where his goal-scoring form caught the eye of Belgian champions Standard Liège, signed him in January 2009. During his time with the club, he was given a first taste of UEFA Champions League football in a 2-0 defeat by Arsenal at the Emirates in November 2009, while he helped them reach the round of 16 in the 2011-2012 Europa League. After 3.5 years at Liège, Syriac moved to division rivals Anderlecht in the summer of 2012, with the club going on to win the title in his first two seasons. In the summer of 2015, Syriac moved to Oostend and scored 14 times in 33 appearances in his debut campaign. A full Ivory Coast international, the 26-year-old has netted once in 6 appearances for his country. Here's a quote from Syriac, quote, "I'm very happy to be at Fulham. From a young age, I have wanted to play in the Premier League, and I believe I can do that with this club. I am a striker, I'm quick, and my number one target is to score goals. I hope to do that for Fulham so that we can have a good rest of the season." Okay, that is the article that's on the Fulham website about their signing, which is Syriac. Steve, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts about this signing? They needed a striker, and they signed one.
I think it's been well documented, chasing from last summer at least. We've been chasing for a while. I've not actually sort of seen a lot of him. I was watching a couple of clips earlier when it was announced. I have paid attention to his Mike loves his stats as well. He's got some like 18 goals in 54 appearances, which I'm guessing is sort of 1 in 3, which is about your sort of average for a striker, but it is in the Belgian league, so I'm not sure how that compares to the Championship, but Mike might be able to sort of tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, very good. All right, Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the signing of Syriac. I also want to mention that while I was doing a little prep work, I had noticed that in October 2015, he was linked to both West Ham and Crystal Palace. So there were a couple of Premier League teams that were taking a look at Syriac. So that's actually a good sign for us. What are your thoughts on the signing, Mike?
Well, yeah, it's good. You know, first of all, it's good to get a signing in the position that we needed, which is a striker. We could have done with it a bit earlier, and you know, all the players who have gone out, we'll talk about them as well later. But he's one of those players who've been around a while on the fringes of being picked up by a British team, and you know, he had a lot of potential, you know, early 20s, you know, high hopes for him. He hasn't quite hit the heights, and we were linked with him last year as well. And, you know, I've had a look at where he's been playing. He has played predominantly as the main striker. He has played, you know, sort of left wing behind the striker before. But, you know, it's his main role. I mean, he's a different type of player to Martin. He can play up there on his own, but I don't think he's such a holder. He's more pace and power. I mean, if you Google his name, you see him sort of the next Drogba. Well, I don't think that's quite happened, but he's 5'8", maybe 5'9", but strong and powerful with pace, and that's possibly what we've needed. You know, you can discuss how the way we play, what does Martin type striker bring, what does a Smith type striker bring, but you know, a pacey, strong forward, that's what Dembele was for us last year, and we never replaced that, or we didn't even have someone else coming through the club. So it's a good signing. It's a loan with an option to buy. And I think given some certain circumstances that we find ourselves in at the moment, you know, not quite in the playoffs, a manager whose contract potentially runs out in the summer, you know, we're hedging our bets a little bit here. So I don't have too much of an issue with it being a loan. If it had been a British player we know, or somebody we know in this country more, I may have been disappointed on just a loan. But I think with this one, it's a sensible way to go forward with it. It gives us a chance to look at him and for him to see whether he fancies London at all.
Okay, great, Mike. And I'm going to go right back to you before I go to Steve. While I was reading a little bit of his bio from the team, and then you mentioned as well some of his assets, having good amount of pace here. Does this now give Slavica formation flexibility to at times maybe play them together, maybe, you know, in certain situations play him alone, or, you know, and again, does this just give him different options to play different ways by having a player that is different than Martin?
Well, it's clear that, Martin, with all the problems associated with him, you know, Jurcanović likes him, but also he was the one player he would play up front. I had a look at some stuff about Smith. I think it was yesterday I had a look. You know, he'd been subbed for 12 games and only got on for two of them. He'd started one game since September. You know, whatever your thoughts on Martin, it was clear that Jurcanović just did not fancy him at all. And Woodrow hadn't been seen since, you know, late August, middle of September. So we needed another option. You know, Aiti can play there, Piazon can play there. But for me, you need a focal point up top, and hopefully he's going to give that. And yes, it will give us an option of playing, you know, two up, and not a case of Smith, who has been that second choice, you know, where really he only worked if you pump the ball in. This is going to allow us to maybe change to three at the back, have two up top like he's tried. And for me, it's the pace. In the Championship, if you've got pace against these defences, as some of our players have shown, you can take them apart. The only hope here is that his finishing is better than a couple of our other guys.
Correct. Very good there, Mike. Over to you, Steve. I want to get your thoughts on this, because when I started reading his bio and I obviously watched some video, I started to think, okay, this now gives Slavica options if he wants to play a different way, if he wants to play him instead of Martin. You know, again, it could be just against a certain opponent, could be a different formation. He might just want to change things during the match. But I think having a pacey striker, I think, is something that we needed, Steve. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess following on, it does give a potential to play two up front if need be. Like
right.
You say, you can either be that direct replacement for Martin, as you've just said, or you know, potentially we can play the two up top. Then you're probably going to have to revert to the 3-5-2 for that to happen, because I think definitely we need to keep the three in the middle of the park. But that's all I really want to add to what you guys have already said.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, before we talk about player leaving Matt Smith, I want to go back to you, Steve, because there's been a good amount of speculation going back and forth this morning, this afternoon, that we've been seeing. And it involves a player that Fulham have been linked to in the past. They've also been linked to Syriac, and now they made that happen. But there's another player that they were linked to in Spain. His name's Sergi Enric. I want to get your thoughts about the speculation that we've been seeing. And you also saw a tweet that shows how the thing kind of ended.
Okay, yeah, so I've retweeted the tweet for those that follow me. I've also sort of roughly translated it to our sort of co-host group. But it basically translates to say that in a nutshell, we were the Basque club demanded that we pay the 10 million release clause up front in, you know, as a single payment, and we were trying to negotiate to actually, you know, pay, I'm guessing, in installments. And because we wouldn't pay it in a single payment up front, it's not going to go ahead at this point in time. Whether or not we revisit that in the summer will be another option, I guess.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Mike, over to you, because we've all been following the speculation all day. And I actually thought that possibly the Enric thing blew up, and then Fulham went to look for other alternatives. And maybe, I don't know, maybe this player was always in the works, but I, you know, when I started seeing all of the tweets and all the speculation, I could just see this thing kind of falling apart, which it did, because the timing just didn't work. What are your thoughts about all the speculation with Sergei Enric?
Yeah, I mean, this was one that really got me riled during the day. I mean, I know we were after him in the summer. He is a good player, and he would be, he would clearly be a Jokanović pick as well, because, you know, he knows the Spanish league so well. But to see him suddenly pop up again on the, you know, today, you know, I'd like to know where that sort of come from. You know, have we gone back to them this morning or last night and said, you know, any chance? And then they've gone and said, yeah, you can have him as a release clause. And then there's a tax issue. You know, really, you've got to, why leave it until today? So, you know, who knows? Maybe it was their club or their agent or whatever. But to try and do an international transfer on the last day, involving release clauses and tax payments, or, you know, loyalty payments, whatever you want to call it. Exactly. You know, I mean, you've got...
Too complicated.
We've known since the end of August when we signed Martin and, you know, all the other transfers, and we had a decent summer. But as we've spoken about many times, Russ, I always felt we were that 10% short.
Yep.
And that 10% for me was another striker, another option. I think that's been played out as well. That's what we've been missing. And so, you know, we've managed to get through the 5 or 6 months without that second striker, that second quality striker. And we should have been on it from the beginning of the month. Now, I know clubs don't want to let players go, and we're seeing lots of transfers today. We're seeing especially strikers move around.
Yeah, a bunch.
But yeah, you should not be looking at these type of transfers on this kind of day, because it's just fraught with problems. You know, knowing our luck, we would have agreed everything and the fax machine run out of A4 paper and we didn't have any in the office or something. You know, it's that kind of silly thing that could probably happen. But so yeah, he'd be a great player to sign. He would have been. And there's still 45 minutes to go, so who knows. But really... it did annoy me, because we've had issues in the past where potentially Fulham are to blame for Ruiz transfer not going through and costing us £1 million, which is the figure we pretty much failed FFP at. So you could argue that cost us, you know, I mean, it just littered with mistakes. And so, yeah, that one really annoyed me earlier this afternoon. I did rant away, as you know, but, you know, it's probably not going to happen. And, you know, we might go back in the summer again. You know, he certainly seems to be in that top two or three players we want.
Yeah.
But it's just not happening at all.
Yeah, it's, you know, listen, it was frustrating today, because I was looking at all the speculation, and I said this to both of you guys in our group chat, that it just seemed like the writers that kept breaking this story seemed like they just kept changing their story about this story every 15 minutes, every half hour. It just seemed kind of convenient that the story kept changing. You know, and I thought maybe there was a little bit of clickbait going on here, that they had the story and they just kept changing it a little bit. It kept changing a little bit. I don't know. One of the writers is a very well-known writer. I just, you know, again, I don't know. It was just frustrating. I think I was more just frustrated with the information coming out, because we don't know when this whole thing with Enric started, Mike. Like you said, did it start yesterday? Did it start the day before? Or did the story just, did the whole thing just start today? If it started today, shame on Fulham. Can I be the first to say, shame on Fulham if they waited to the last minute to try to get this all done? Because it really, there's just way too much to get done. So that to me is a shame, because based on everything that I've read about the player, he is a quality striker. But you know, on the flip side, we did bring in a striker that they coveted last summer based on the speculation we saw. Cyriac was linked to Fulham all last summer, so maybe they did get a player. I just, you know, again, I don't know if the two are linked, meaning that they couldn't get Heinrich, and then they went for Cyriac. But, you know, listen, they might have just gone on Cyriac on alone. Maybe they wanted to bring in a couple players. I don't know. But it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they could not, for two windows, make it happen with that player, guys. It's just unfortunate. All right, while we wait for some more news from the club, let's go through some more things that have happened in the transfer window so far. So I'm going to go back to you, Steve, and I want to get your thoughts on something that happened this morning. We've been hearing about this. I actually heard some talk about it, you know, on the broadcast of the last match. You know, Gentleman Jim was saying, hey, you know, Matt Smith is not in the 18. Maybe he's on his way out. Well, he is on his way out. He's out. Matt Smith has been sold to QPR. So I want to go to you first, Steve. Thoughts on Matt Smith leaving for QPR?
I don't think it's a surprise, given he spent most of the season on the bench. And I do wish him the best, but I don't think he was quite up to the task for us. What I would say is that he could still do a kind of a job. And the fact that we've got rid of him before getting a replacement in, obviously we've got Cyriac now, yep. But before getting a replacement in is, as you all know from my tweet, it's criminal. A lot of clubs get players in before they release them, but we seem to get rid of players before getting them in, and half the time we don't get them in. So this is where we end up with problems.
No, very good point there, Steve. Over to you, Mike. Listen, I know your thoughts on Matt Smith. We've talked about him a great deal, so I want to get your thoughts now that it's official, he's left the club. Thoughts on him joining QPR, though?
Well, I mean, you don't really want to see him go to a rival. I mean, you know, Matt Smith is a hard-working player, but, you know, quality-wise, he just wasn't good enough, I don't think. I don't think he is good enough for the Championship. He's got to play in a team which is going to launch long balls. He's always going to cause problems. He will pick up goals. But for me, he's just, you know, he's too big, too heavy, not fit enough. But, you know, he was here, what, 2.5 years? Never heard a peep out of him moaning. You know, most players will end up going to the press. There'll be a little leak. But he seems to have been totally professional in everything that he's done.
I'm glad that you said that.
At the club. And his message, you know, to the fans on him leaving was very good. And I'll just say a little story about him. We played Derby earlier in the season. He was a sub, an unused one again. But I was in the ground for a considerable time afterwards. And post-match, all the subs who haven't played all have to do a fitness sort of, you know, run the workout for about 15 minutes, actually. And it was him, Adoy, and I think it may have been Cabano. I'm not 100% sure, but it was those three guys. So imagine Matt Smith and these two, and they are running, and I mean running, sprinting the full length of the pitch, then whips of the pitch, and the fitness guy is pushing them, and they are on their knees at the end of it. And Matt Smith obviously was struggling to keep up with him, but he ran himself into the ground for that 15 minutes. And, you know, there's a player who's not kicked a ball for a couple of months at that particular time, but he was giving his all in that session. So good luck to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult saying good luck having the fact that he's gone to QPR, but, you know, he will score some goals, and we're bound to see people say, oh, look, we should have kept him. You can only keep him if you're going to play to his strengths. That's not our style. So good luck to him. You know, I wish him all the best.
Yes, so do I, Mike. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because he has been a professional. You know, he hasn't said anything. He hasn't done anything bad. And he's also scored some goals for us. You know, listen, he scored an important goal for us against Newcastle to start the season. He got us going in the right direction. So people forget that, but he did score some goals for us. So I do want to wish him the best of luck. And Steve, before we move on from this, I want to get your thoughts on this as well, because listen, we talk about players that come and go. Some Some run their mouth out. Some go to the press. Matt Smith just did his job. So I want to wish him the best, even though he's going to QPR. Your thoughts of him just being a professional with Fulham?
Yeah, I mean, I could be wrong, but I probably get the impression with a lot of transfers, and Mike may or may not add to this, that Matt Smith might have been aware for maybe several days that there was interest in him. But like you said, he's always a professional person. He'll always sort of now and again respond to tweets, you know, favourite tweets and stuff like that. So he's always interacting with the fans when he can. And I just think he's sort of, he does seem like a down-to-earth lad. I mean, obviously, I don't know him personally, but that's just the way he comes across.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's now talk about Fulham's first signing of the period. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you because I've seen you tweet about this. You actually want Fulham to bring in an attacking central midfielder before the window closes. Well, they did bring in a defensive midfielder, but I want to get your thoughts on Thanos Petsos because it looks like to me he's backing up Kevin McDonald. I could be wrong about this. I have a feeling he might be jumping ahead of Scott Parker in that role, which is interesting. Thoughts on bringing in Petsos?
Yeah, I mean, he's apparently, again, a player we were interested in last summer. So it seems his stats and scouting add up. He's hardly played this season, you know, but, you know, reading a couple of reports from some German fans who have seen him play or even some Greek fans, you know, he's a tidy, strong player. He came on for, you know, last part of the game the other day. Had a decent shot just over the... we didn't see much else, a couple of little passes. It must be difficult coming in a day or two before and then trying to play the way we play, especially. But from what I saw, yeah, he's definitely there. Physicality-wise, he's a defensive midfielder. That's what he looks like to me. I don't see him playing a more attacking role. So, yeah, he's that McDonald replacement or second man. Parker... for all his running around and his, you know, fist pumping and a few tackles here and there, he's been asked to do that holding job a couple of times, you know, Wolves away, the prime example where it didn't work. And he's really not that kind of defensive midfielder, you know, somebody who's going to get the tackles in and hold his position. And I think this guy may be able to do that. You know, again, it's a wait and see with him, isn't it? It's just a loan,
right.
but you know, Jokanović seems to have this midfield free, and so he's got Parker there, sort of hanging around, and we've now got Petos. But the thing that really worries me is that we've let people like Tunnicliffe and Christensen go.
Yeah.
And I've had a number of discussions on Twitter about this, and I don't know why people are saying this, but the way we play, we have McDonald sitting, and you have Kearney and Johansson as the two attacking midfielders, you know, sort of like an inverted triangle.
Right.
And you look at any average positions, any passing diagrams, that's how we play. And I'm saying if Johansson or Kearney are injured, who plays there? And people are saying
great
to me,
point.
Aluko and IET Cabano. And I sort of go, well, no, sorry, they're not midfielders. They might be able to play behind a striker in like a 4-4-1-1 or something. But can you really tell me that they can replace one of those two? Because I don't believe there is. So I can't see another midfielder in the squad now that we've let these two guys go who can fit those positions. You almost have to look at a couple of the under-23s, and, you know, you can't rely on them. So if we're going to do anything now in the next 35 minutes, it's a central attacking midfielder, someone with a bit of passing ability, running, you know, mobility. That's what I would like to see. And, you know, we'll have to wait and see if they do that. But with the new guy, he's going to be that. He's going to be on the bench, and he'll come on when McDonald tires, I suspect.
Right, but Mike, it's also good for competition, and that's why I'm glad that they brought this guy in, because I believe he is a direct replacement for Kevin McDonald, and I think that it's important to have this competition at all positions, so I'm glad that they brought him in. Like you said, he can also come off the bench now, but maybe there'll be situations where he could start instead of Kevin McDonald, or like you said, if he gets injured, you have this other option. Steve, over to you. I want to get your thoughts about Petzos and also what Mike was just mentioning, because I haven't mentioned another player he was talking about. We're going to talk about Tunnicliffe and LVC leaving, but also we could talk about Yothabed leaving, because there isn't much cover in those two positions that Mike is just mentioning, if you know, cover for Kearney or for Johansson. So I want to get your thoughts on the signing of Petzos and also what we've been talking about here.
Petzos, I mean, we haven't really seen too much of him so far. But if his beard's anything to go by, I'm guessing he's going to be quite a decent player. That's one heck of a beard. I haven't had the chance to see Petzos play live yet. Will against Leeds, well, hopefully against Leeds. And Mike, like I say, Mike and yourself can probably add a bit more to that than I can. But if we move on to sort of the LVC first, I mean, I know a lot few of us are quite hot on him, and I really can't understand how he's not. He wasn't even near the team. And obviously we've lost some players like Tunnicliffe's gone out. I can't even believe he wasn't retained. I know he's not been the best since he got injured, but before that, you know, you kind of actually surely seen some clips of how he was before he got injured, and somehow to get him to rediscover that, you know, he could make our starting 11 if he rediscovers the form that he previously had. So I really don't understand why he's gone out. I don't know if any of the guys want to add anything to that. Okay.
No, very good there, Steve. And Mike, I want to go back to you because we, you know, let's transition because you've already mentioned that LVC has gone out on loan. Let's talk about this a little bit more, your thoughts on that. But let's also put Yothabed in there as well, because these are all midfielders that we now have let go. And Yothabed has gone out on loan to Celta Vigo. And I'm thinking now maybe that was a mistake, Mike. Partially for the reasons you're talking about. So I want to get your thoughts about these players going out on loan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Jokanović is someone who, if he decides you're not the player for him, you know, you're not going to get any squad, whatever, then there is an argument for letting these players go. We can all look at a squad size, and that's what I've done today. You know, if you look at all our league games, we've had 25 players used. We've allowed 6 to leave via loans and a transfer. So that leaves you just 19 players. One of those is Adrian, who played like 2 minutes.
Yep.
So you're basically left with a core squad of 18 plus the new guy Petzos. Now we have another striker. And it does seem as if Jokanović is, you know, quite happy to work with a close-knit squad. So, you know, Corley Woodrow, I think he made his decision that he just wasn't good enough, and there's plenty of fans who feel that as well, and he hasn't been in the squad. So, in a way, loaning him out, you're not really losing anything in that sense, because he's just not going to use him. You know, he'll use other options. Christensen makes sense because we've given him a contract until next year, and he needs games. He needs a good run of games, and he's not... He obviously, it doesn't look like he's going to get it with us. But from a squad point of view, and what I just said about, you know, if we have injuries, and we are lacking there. So to let him go before anyone else comes in, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
And Tunnicliffe, I've always liked Tunnicliffe in the fact he is wholehearted, not the most skillful player in the world. But we've allowed him to go, and then we've had this other guy come in. So really, his position has been filled. So it's, the Christensen one's an odd one, is the oddest one for me out of those players. And Hozabad, he hasn't settled. We've changed the formation. But again, you know, he is a player who could play in that position. So I can only hope that we have someone, you know, who's there, who's going to be another option, another choice. Because for us to look at the next 19 games plus an FA Cup game, and to think that Jokanović has those three midfielders we've been talking about, and that's all he's planning on using, or that's all he can use, I think that's going to be a real struggle, and that puts a lot of, you know, strain on those players. And if we're going to get in the playoffs, potentially you've got another 3 games. So we need another attacking midfielder, and it's not looking good with 30 minutes to go.
Okay, very good. I want to get your thoughts, Steve, on Stevie Humphreys going out on loan to Shrewsbury Town.
Excellent. Well, before that, Russ, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the latest tweet, Fulham from MBS Sports. And they're saying that with regards to Kamara, they're saying that Amiens, so I'm guessing that's his club, want to make sure they have another forward signed before signing details on Kamara's transfer. So this sounds like one of those that is either going to go right to the last minute or it doesn't happen. My my guessing is the latter, unfortunately, with past experience. But watch this space, I guess, for that one. 28 minutes to go.
Okay, very good.
But yeah, sorry, going back to Humphreys. He looks quite happy. He looks quite made up on Twitter when he posted the other day that he signed his new contract with us and that he's gone out on loan. Now, I was actually a big fan of him coming on instead of Matt Smith when I was watching him against Brighton at the Cottage. But I think potentially it is the right move for him to go out on loan for the second half of the season just to sort of see what the league's all about. It'd probably be a little bit more physical down there as well, so it'll help him adjust. But I don't think he's too far away. I'd be interested to know what a little bit more on that, what Mike thinks.
Okay, very good. Mike, over to you. I want to get your thoughts about Stevie Humphreys going out on loan to Shrewsbury Town. And I didn't mention this before, but this is the good part about this is that he signed a new deal, Mike. So talk about him going out on loan, but the good part about it is he signed an extension.
Yeah, I'll deal with the contract bit first. Yeah, I was getting concerned that he hadn't signed an extension, and you know, he's quite vocal on Twitter, and he was getting a lot of good press from all the goals he was scoring in the Premier League 2 and whatever the under 23 league is called now. And you know, he got into the squad. He came on in the Brighton game. Things didn't work out, and you know, that showed that Jokanović had a lot of faith in him. But I also think it did show that he wasn't quite ready for us. You know, I always felt he was being pushed a bit too early. But you know, for him now to go out to Shrewsbury, who seemed to be almost our de facto loan team at the moment, I think it's really good. And if he can get a run of games there and get a couple of goals, he's going to come back, you know, a better player. I think he tweeted about playing proper men's football, or you know. So I've high hopes for him, and I'm really pleased with the length of contract we gave him. I mean, that shows a lot of faith, and he is going to be a decent player. I've got more hopes of him progressing than I ever felt about Corley Woodrow, I have to be honest, and that's not in retrospect. I just you know, watching Woodrow as he came through the leagues, I could never understand why people were going on about him about being such a high goal scorer, because I never ever saw that. You know, he's a good player, but I don't think that's his best part of his game. But Humphreys has something a bit extra about him, you know, and certainly a will to win and a desire to get a goal. So hopefully get a run, get 5 or 6 goals for the end of the season will do him a lot of good, and come back in the summer and he should be part of the first team squad.
Yeah, listen, I think this is a good situation for him, Mike. You know, I said this on the last show. I think this is a better situation for him. He's been scoring a lot of goals at under 23, and I think that's good. But I think going to Shrewsbury Town is different for him. I think it's, you know, again, being in front of a nice size stadium and really get a chance to have people behind him and everything, you know, get a crowd behind him. I think that's something that he probably could use, you know, the atmosphere. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I can't really add any more to that. So, the fact that we let him go and then, you know, must have shown that we were going to bring someone in, because, you know, he came that third choice, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. All right, guys, listen, just so you know, we are doing this live. I am seeing some more speculation with Kamara. So we just keep an eye on it. We only have, like I said, you know, less than 20 minutes. I was going to say 40 minutes, less than 20 minutes to go. So keep your eyes peeled to see if there's anything that happens at the very last minute with Fulham. Right now, there's just one deal today. Hopefully, there'll be another deal. But right now, there's only one. All right, guys. Now let's move on. Let's go into the Cottage Talk Roundtable. And we have to start by talking about a player that, you know, everything blew up over the weekend, but we've talked a great deal about him in general. But, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk about Chris Martin. We have to talk about Chris Martin. What are your thoughts now on the Chris Martin situation? And also, how do you feel Fulham have handled the Chris Martin situation? So two parts. Your thoughts on how everything has gone down, but I want your feelings on how the club has handled it.
Well, I mean, it's a really difficult one because, as you know, Russ, from the day we signed him, I've always been a, you know, I don't know if fan's the right word, but I certainly, you know, appreciate what he can offer to the team. And when he wasn't scoring at the beginning, there was a lot of criticism of him, but I could see what his role was. But then, of course, you know, he's down tools. We've had all this contract issue. Then he's back in playing. And then, you know, more contract issues with Derby last week. And, you know, quite frankly, I've had enough of him. You know, he played really well the other day. He did everything that I know he can do as a player. But as an actual person, a human being, someone wearing our kit, I just don't want him there, you know. And
right.
I would have wished we would have signed two strikers. And personally, I wouldn't have sent him back to Derby. I wouldn't have played him in the under-23s. He would be part of the squad, training on his own, getting fat so that when he goes back to Derby in the summer, they have to get him fit again. And that's how I would have dealt with it. You know, but Jokanović is the manager, and he knows how key he is. And in the end, it's a results business, and they've gone down that route. But I think this is a wider problem where we've seen a number of players over the last 2 or 3 weeks, you know, throw their toys out the pram. And, you know, it's player power. They've got so much money now. They don't really need to worry about what they're doing, who they're upsetting. And, you know, playing for the shirt, playing for the team, playing for the fans, they don't care. You know, it is just a job to them. Let's remember that. But,
right,
you know, you want your players. So we go back to Matt Smith. You know, I'm not a big fan of him, but quite frankly, I would have played him before Chris Martin as soon as he down tools. I've got no time for players who go on strike and make themselves unavailable. These guys earn more than some of us would earn in, you know, they earn more in a week than some of us earn in a year. And it's, we would all love to play football every day of our life, you know, as a job. And they have that privilege and they treat it so badly. And it's not as if they're on strike because they need more pay or their working conditions are bad. It's because I want to go back and live in Derby. Well, you know, give me Derby, give me London, you know, I know what I'd pick. But yeah, so have the club handled it well? I mean, they've stuck to their guns. They're not sending back to Derby yet. But personally, no, I'd rather he wasn't playing for us at all.
Okay, so personally, it's you wish he wasn't with us, but you understand the job that he's done. But before I go to Steve, you know, this is just my opinion, Mike, because we're talking a little bit about how Fulham have handled this. And I look at the Ross McCormack situation, even the Moussa Dembele situation this time last season, and I thought the club did everything that they could. They showed strength by holding on to these players, you know, when we really needed them. In this situation, with everything going on with Steve McClaren, the way Steve McClaren handled this is horrible. In fact, you know, I really think that, you know, if I was Derby County, I would get his ass out of there. I think that's not the right manager for that club. And the way he handled the situation, I think, with Chris Martin has been horrible. So that's just my thoughts on that. But getting back to Fulham, Mike, I think that they've showed strength by sticking to their guns and not letting him just go back. I think many clubs would have sent him back. They put Fulham first. I think that's where I'm going on this. I know how you feel about the player, but he does do a job for us. But more importantly for me, I think the club put themselves first because they could have sent him back.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing the club could do is send the guy back and say, you know, you're not wanted. But, you know, my understanding is Jokanović was behind a lot of what's gone on with regards keeping him at the club and statements that have been made. And, you know, I'm sure he personally feels a bit let down. I just feel there's ways that Martin could have dealt with this. You know, I'm not going to air what some of us have been told regarding his situation, but, you know, what's wrong with these people getting their agent and the manager and the owner, the CEO together in a room and trying to thrash out a solution instead of, you know, washing all your dirty laundry in public? You know, and even the contract by Derby last week. Okay, fine. They could have all said, look, we're going to offer him a new contract and we don't want you buying him and he wants to come back to Derby. And the clubs could have said, okay, fine, but we have a contract to loan him for the rest of the season. You don't have to mention this. We won't mention it. And come the summer, you get your player back and he'll be on a new contract. But no, they didn't, because they were trying to unsettle him and unsettle the club.
No and class. So Derby, no class. Yeah, no class.
Absolutely. And McLaren, you say Derby should get rid of him. I'm afraid McLaren he's gone back to Derby. They see him as, you know, the owners, whoever runs the club, see him as the right guy, so they're going to back him whatever he does. I know some of the fans aren't happy, you know, because I've seen some of the tweets and on the forums and that kind of stuff. But it's just annoying that they can't be grown up and sit in a room and try and sort out a solution. And you know, and that's why I've got no time for mine at all, zero time, none at all. He scored the other day, I clapped. He got subbed, I just ignored him. His name was called out, I just ignored him. I did not boo, but that's up to people if they want to boo him. But this bloke is now second in my list of players who I've hated to watch now wear a Fulham shirt in the 39 years I've been going.
Well, that's horrible, Nick. And listen, I understand it. And I understand if the fans boo him. I certainly get that. And I also understand how you handled it. He's paid to do a job. And he's going to do a job for us. And that's the way I look at it now. But I am furious at Derby County and especially at Steve McLaren. No class whatsoever the way he's handled this. They did not need to have that kind of introduction to him with his new contract on their website. There are ways to do it. They did it, like you said, Mike, to unsettle him, unsettle us, unsettle everyone. And they have absolutely no class. I should say, not Derby County in general. Steve McLaren has absolutely no class. And it is really, if this whole weekend I was angry about this whole situation. Steve, your thoughts on all of this? I'm sorry.
That's all right. So obviously, again, I've got to be a little bit careful what I say, just in case one day I'm unfortunate enough to find myself sort of officiating at a club like Derby, because at the end of the day, that would be a nice situation for me personally. But I think if any of them were to listen to this, I think they need to understand there's a way of approaching the situation, as you guys have already said. You can approach it as an adult, which I think the majority of fans, including Derby, will say they haven't approached it from an adult point of view. It's been a childish approach. And like you've already said, they could have kept it quiet to the end of the season, had that sort of gentleman's agreement in place, and not gone all this flash, you know, new signing, you know, he signed a new contract, blah, blah, blah. What would be coincidentally funny is if Jokanović said there's still a potential that the deal could happen. Not sure how it would, but apparently the deal, you know, the option's still in place. If come the end of the season, he actually did sign for us, I would find that pretty amusing.
And that's a funny part about this, Mike. I want to go back to you about this. I'm glad that Steve mentioned this. In the reaction from the match on the Fulham website, there are quotes from Slavisa, and he mentioned this. And at the very end, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact wording, but I think he says we have the option for next season. Now, I think he meant to buy, but what are your thoughts on that? You know, is this even an option for Fulham? Is he just saying that just so they save a little face here? I want your thoughts about why they keep mentioning purchase to buy. I mean, I've been mentioning it because I think that's part of the agreement, but the club has been mentioning it as well. And then I just find it weird that at the very end of this manager reaction, it didn't say it said he could be, I want to say it said we have an option for next season or something like that. So what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's I read and I listened to his comments after the other game, and I do think it's his English which has confused the matter there. And I, you know, there was someone on Friends of Fulham who dissected it and has read so much into it. I mean, I think he's basically saying, you know, we have the option to buy him. Somebody said, we got the option to loan him again next year. I don't believe that. I think we have an option to buy him, but you're going to need all parties to agree. So, I just can't see that happening. And then, there was another comment as well about May, about him possibly going back to Derby or in the playoffs and that kind of thing. I have written to Alistair McIntosh asking for clarification on what Jokanović said there, because I can't believe we would have loaned a player for a whole season and not included the playoff dates. I mean, I just find that, you know, ridiculous. But there is a good chance, you know, and I have seen it happen before, a player has been loaned for a season and then that club doesn't make the playoffs, but his parent club does, and he goes back to them. But I don't know whether, because of the loan rules that changed this year, you know, whether that can still happen. But, you know, that would be fine. You know, if we end the season and we're in eighth and Derby are sixth and Derby want Martin back and the rules say that he can go back to them, then all's fair in love and war with that, isn't it? You know, he can go back. But there seems to be some people who also think that, you know, we can both be in the playoffs and Martin goes back to Derby, which if that happens, you know, then someone who signed that contract wants to get the sack. Well, yeah, exactly. But we also know the other option is we could both be in the playoffs and, of course, we could play Derby and Martin can't play. So, you know, that's another stupidity of it.
But,
you know, that could be another discussion for another time. You know, loans within the same league, I don't agree with. So.
Okay. It's a mess. So let's not take that any further. But yeah, I've seen a bunch about that. And I do think, Mike, I think you're right. I think it is broken English. I think it has to do with an option to buy. But when he said next season, that kind of thing, couldn't mean he means another loan. But like you said, it probably deals with his broken English there. All right.
Russ, can I jump in on that?
Go ahead then. Go ahead then.
Yeah,
Steve.
Just a query. I don't know what anyone else thinks, but if you're willing to let a player go out on loan, deeming they're not quite good enough or not good enough to get in your side, then why should you then get the option to have them not play against you? It seems a bit. You're saying they're not good enough for you, but you don't want them playing against you, and you're worried that they're too good to come up against. So it kind of, to me, sounds a bit weird.
Yeah, I hear you there, Steve. All right. Before we go into our preview, and we're counting down 10 minutes to go to the transfer window closes. So hopefully, knock on wood, we're gonna have another signing. But we're prepared if we don't, because we're actually gonna be previewing the Burton Albion match regardless. But I do have one more topic in the Cottage Talk roundtable that I want to talk to you guys about. It's something that Emilio has brought up to me. Talking about leadership on the pitch. So, Mike, I want to start with you. Do Fulham need more leadership on the pitch? You know, a vocal leader. You can lead by example. I think Tom Kearney leads by example. Other players lead by example. But they don't seem to have a vocal leader out there, like a Danny Murphy. Would you agree with that?
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I think the captaincy in football is overblown anyway. But I mean, I see McDonald, you know, he's quite vocal. I've seen Aluko, you know, say his stuff as well. I mean, I don't know if it's leadership. It's been more just lacking that quality player who dictates the game, either from the back or in midfield. I mean, we had a load of changes. We've got new players in the team. Kearney was, you know, I suppose the obvious choice. But Parker is the club captain. Kearney seems to be on the pitch captain. But he's captain by default almost, so not as a leader. And I think he let himself down, I thought, at QPR. Very lucky to stay on, in my eyes. Although Steve might be able to tell me from a referee's point of view whether he should have got sent off. But But yeah, you know, maybe we do, Russ, but there's experienced players out there on that pitch. And, you know, for me, McDonald is probably, if you were going to change it, he would be the person I would give it to.
Yeah. I was thinking, McDonald, if there is that type of leader out there. Steve, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'll just answer Mike's question in around Kearney and possibly getting sent off. Yeah, I mean, you could say it's a bit stupid. It's you know, excessive force, you could say, with pushing him. The problem is that the referee's probably got in his mind, when you push someone, you generally stumble backwards and onto the floor. You don't just hit the deck, sort of plummet vertically. So he's probably thought he's made a bit of a meal of it. And probably on the basis of that, probably yellow card's the right decision. But you're right, he could well have got sent off for that. And it would have been, you could say, possibly deserved and very stupid to get a 3-game ban. But I think ultimately probably yellow card was the right decision. Otherwise, you'd be having red cards every day of the week. Obviously, had he pushed him in the face, that would have been a different matter.
Okay, good. And just in general, thoughts on a vocal leader on the pitch for Fulham?
Yeah, I'm not really sure we have one. I mean, do we need one? That's another debate, because a lot of people at the moment, we're playing fairly well, I'd say. I still think we're underachieving and can play better. But I think Kenny's leading by example a lot of the time, apart from that incident, obviously. I mean, again, who is vocal out there? I mean, without being down on the pitch with the players to see who's talking and who's not, I mean, maybe someone like a Callas would be more vocal. But again, only those that are really there could tell you. And sort of, you know, Mike's probably better placed than myself to actually mention that.
Okay, very good. Mike, do you think it's really necessary to have this vocal leader? You know, listen, my favorite Fulham player of all time is Danny Murphy. And when the chips are down, things aren't going well, I would always look at him and he would be getting everyone together and being that fiery leader. Does this team need a fiery leader, or am I making too much of this?
No, I think that, you know, there are certain times when you need someone to, you know, get the troops going or get them organized, especially, you know, when you're defending corners, that type of stuff. I mean, vocally
right.
out there on the pitch, vocally out there, McDonald is vocal.
Right.
But really, beyond that, I don't see too much else. I mean, you know, Martin is vocal when he's moaning, but I don't, you know, he's not someone who's going to inspire the team or anything like that. You know, and out of the other centre backs, Tim Ream is a very quiet player, Sigurdsson as well. So, you know, Callis can say a bit here and there, but really, you know, if McDonald or Parker are not on the pitch, then it's a very, very quiet team. I mean, I sit Johnny Haynes stand, you can, because, you know, it's not the loudest stadium in the world, you can hear sometimes, you know, just what's going on out there, even with a big crowd. And really, it is, at the moment, it is just McDonald. So, you know, maybe that's something they need to look at for next year, you know, a proper, you know, armband wearing leader.
Okay, very good there. It's very interesting because I think next season they should really get someone that has that type of personality. I think they're missing it a little bit. You know, when things are getting tough, when they're in what I would call a rock fight, you know, when they have to grind out a victory, I would like to see someone really, really get everyone together. Like Mike said, I think McDonald does some of that. But, you know, I'd like to see someone else have that type of personality. I think they're a little bit of that. That's a reason why I mentioned that. All right, guys, we only have 4 minutes left in the window, so let's see if anything happens. But we're going to end with previewing the Burton Albion match. So let's start here. I'm gonna share some information with you guys on Burton Albion. And let's start with my stats comparison that I've done between in the league. So let's start there, and Steve, I'll go to you first and get your thoughts on this comparison between the two teams. Let's start with possession. Fulham are second in the league at 58.2%. Burton Albion are 18th at 48.1%. Shots, Fulham are first in the league at 16.2%. Burton Albion are 8th at 13.3%. Aerials won, Fulham are last in the league. They have been for a long time at 16.8%, while Burton Albion are 4th at 25.6%. Now, WhoScored.com, which I got this information from, does overall player rate. So the average rating for Fulham is 6.85 for their players, and that's fourth, while Burton Albion are 14th at 6.75. Now, let's go to some passing stats here. Passing success, Fulham are first in the league at 83%, while Burton Albion are 20th at 67.3. Crosses per game, Fulham are currently tied for first with 24. And let's see, it looks like Burton Albion is second with 23. Through balls, Fulham are tied at first with 2. And Burton Albion are tied for 18th with none. Long balls, Fulham are last in the league with 66. And Burton Albion are tied for fourth with 84. Short passes, Fulham are first in the league at 503. And Burton Albion are 21st at 273. All right, Steve, to start our preview, what do you see between the two teams with the stats I just shared with you?
Aerial duels, I mean, we touched on this before, and as you guys know, stats isn't my strong point. It's more of a Mike thing. You're a lot better than I am, Mike. But yeah, I start aerial duels all the time, but I don't think against Burton that's going to be particularly important. I know possession, you know, there's 10%, it's quite a lot, but on the average for possession between the pair of us, but I think we're going to have a lot of possession tomorrow night. And as always, it's what we do with it, really. We drew 1-1 in the last game, but again, I think we really should have won that game as well. I think we had quite a bit of possession that game. Mike, correct me if I'm wrong in a minute. But again, all those stats lead me to believe it's going to be a game that's won in the middle of the park and not for aerial duels and long balls.
Okay, very good. All right, Mike, over to you. I'm now going to share some characteristics of Burton Albion, but I will start with where they are in the league. They are 20th. They have 7 victories, 7 draws, 14 losses. They've scored 28. They've given up 38. They're on a minus 10 goal differential and are on 28 points. Fulham are 11th currently. We have 10 victories, 10 draws, 7 losses, scored 44, given up 32, plus 12 goal differential, and are on 40 points. Here are the characteristics of Burton Albion. Here are their strengths: attacking down the wings, creating scoring chances, aerial duels, defending set pieces, protecting the lead, stealing the ball from the opposition. Weaknesses: keeping possession of the ball, they're very weak at finishing scoring chances, and defending against skillful players. Burton Albion's style of play: control the game in the opposition's half, attempt crosses often, long balls, take a lot of shots, consistent first 11, and they're non-aggressive. Now I'm going to give you their attack sides. They attack down the left 35% of the time, middle 23% of the time, and right 41%, so they're heavy on the right side. Action zones: they're in their own third 21% of the time, middle third 40% of the time, and opposition third 32% of the time. Okay. And I believe own third was 29%. So I got that wrong. There's a golden for you. All right, Mike, what stands out to you from the information I just shared with you in regards to Burton Albion?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that surprised me about Burton Albion is, you know, how direct and how aggressive they are. You know, considering the manager, I always expect them to play, you know, nice football, but actually they're not like that at all. Maybe that's just down to the quality of players he's got. But you know, they're going to be in our face again. It's going to be the long balls. I mean, we saw it in the home game, and you know, we're going to have the ball a lot, and you know, we're going to have to beat them on the floor, I think. You know, I mean, the good thing is, oddly enough, that you know, Woodrow and Christensen might be able to play against us, which is good. Right. But yeah, I mean, it's a contrast in style, some of their gamesmanship as well. Whether they do that at home, that will be interesting. Yeah, for me, it's how direct they're going to be, and against us, I continue to see it week in, week out in games. If you knock a ball straight down the middle against us, we are a little bit weak there. And I'm going tomorrow, so it's going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, we'll have to see what happens, really.
Okay. And Mike, I'm really curious, and I look forward to getting your recap of what you watched here. Will they have the same game plan that they had at Craven Cottage? Because they need the points. Will they try to play a little bit, or are they just going to try to frustrate us? So I definitely want your input of what you watched, because I'm curious what is going to be Nigel Clough's approach here. Is he going to have the same approach? Do you think he's going to have the same approach, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I think anyone who's in, he's been a manager long enough. He's going to see our weaknesses and try to exploit them. And that is all about being in our face, frustrating and being a bit of gamesmanship, that kind of stuff. And I fully expect a quite a difficult evening tomorrow.
Okay,
still
very
think
good.
Win,
all right.
But
I don't think it's going to be easy. And that's going to lead me to ask you, key players for tomorrow, who needs to have a really excellent game for Fulham to get all 3 points?
Depends who plays up front, I suppose. But Martin, again, he needs to turn up and give a performance like he did the other day. And also the two centre-backs, because of the way they're going to play against us. So two centre-backs and Chris Martin up top.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Steve. What do Fulham need to do to win this match tomorrow? How do they win the match? Mike just gave you the key players, but what is going to be the approach? What do you think Savisa is going to do against this team?
More of the same, I think. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think just more of the same. We've got to play our game. We've got to try and obviously, I was probably a bit hasty in saying that it will be one in the middle of the park. I still think it could be, but obviously Mike's alluded to the fact they do like a long ball too. But just cutting those out as and when they do come. But I do think they'll be few and far between, because I think we will control possession, and it's really about what we do. I thought they did defend fairly well last time in getting a draw, so it's going to be a case of whether we can break them down. I definitely think we've got more character about us now, and we're definitely more suited to be able to do that this time around.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, Mike, over to you. I know you always enjoy this. Who's your starting 11?
My starting 11, or what I think he's going to play? I think Button's going to go back in. I thought Bettinelli did well the other day, but still think Button he'll stick with faith with him. I think Fredericks will come back in at right back, and Malone. So I think both fullbacks will change. Centre backs stay the same. Normal midfield three, and I think Aiti will come in for Piazon. Aluko will be on the other side, and I think it'll be Martin up top. I'm not sure if the new guy will be available. And when I say new guy, he's the only guy who's come in today by the looks of it, unless Fulham are waiting to do one of their 11:15 announcements. But that's what I expect. I don't think he's going to deviate much. He hasn't got much to deviate from. We now have a smaller squad than we did on the 1st of January. And, that's where we stand with the team, really. It's not going to change hardly at all.
Okay. Very good there, Mike, and I agree with you there. All right, Steve, over to you. Let's go right to predictions. Give me your prediction for this match tomorrow.
I could see us drawing the game again, but I am going to put my neck on the line. I'm going to say we're going to win 3-1.
Okay, very good there. Mike, back to you. What's your prediction?
No, I'm thinking, I think they'll score against us, but I think we'll be strong enough in the end, so I think it'll be 3-1, actually.
It's unanimous. I'm going 3-1 as well. I think Fulham are going to win this match. I think they're going to be tough, but eventually I think we're going to break them down. Second half, they're going to score a goal like you guys are all talking about, and I say Fulham are going to win 3-1. Okay, very good, guys. All right, we are past the transfer window deadline. Mike, can things still happen at this point? I see people tweeting, well, things can happen. So how long do we really have here before it's definite final that they've not signed another player?
Well, it's interesting that Sarah Brooks hasn't tweeted anything yet. I mean, she's usually quite good, quite good at saying that's it, good night. I mean, I think there's a rule if you've actually started contract discussions with someone, you've reached a certain point and you've notified the league, then some deals can still go through after the 11 o'clock shut off time. So there is a good point. We'll finish the show and we'll go to bed and then wake up tomorrow and we find we've signed someone. But at the moment, it's not looking good.
Okay.
So something could happen, but I'm not holding out too much hope.
Okay, very good. All right then, guys, I think we should just wrap it up and we'll see what happens.
There, no. Sorry, Russ, Sarah Brooks has said, been told we can go home, so good night all. So that's not good.
Well, okay.
That's not good, Russ. Let's be honest here.
No, that's bad.
We have a smaller squad. We've signed one striker on loan. We've let six players go out, and we are within a game in hand of being just three points off the playoffs, and we have not strengthened the squad enough, I don't believe, for us to sustain a challenge to make those playoffs. We're playing catch up, and you need to gamble, and we have not done that. And for me, I think there's some underlying things now going on as to why we've not only spent money, but even if we have just not strengthened enough for us to push on. We will have to do with what we've got, and it's shown it's a good team, but has it got that bit extra to get more than 11 points over a six game period? Can they get those five wins in a row? Because they've not shown that at all this year. So my gut feeling now is we are going to end up being short by about 7 or 8 points, and we've missed a possible chance of the playoffs, I think, through this window.
Do you think a candidate or go, guys, is something that we've been chatting about? But
we have been chatting. Let's be honest here. We have been chatting. We have a group chat. We have been talking about it. And this is not something that I wanted to talk about, but I got to be honest with you. I'm very disappointed by this news, extremely disappointed. And, I've seen it all over Twitter as we're doing this show. It kills me to say this, but, Mike, I agree with you. I'm the optimist. I'm not optimistic right now. They had an opportunity here. And for whatever reason, I know it takes two to make a deal, but if this is it, this is all that they did, I'm thoroughly disappointed. Steve, your thoughts about what we did here?
I'm quite disappointed, to be honest. I'd have been happy with if we had got this, although it sounded like Kamara was a little bit overpriced possibly and left too late. I'd have been a bit happier if we got him in. I mean, when you consider, I mean, I've openly said that I think the only option available was top six. And given the Sheffield Wednesday and occupy that currently, I believe, and have just brought in Rhodes. I mean, when you look at, I think Zach Clough was looking at going to Forest, Ravel Morrison, QPR, Rhodes, Sheffield Wednesday, Grabham to Reading, and even Barrow from Swansea to Leeds. I mean, I think we're going to find it really tough now to get into the top six. I think, and I'll be honest with you, I think even Jukanovic will sit there, and who knows, he might be smoking a pipe, having a pint, listening to us right now. But I think he'll be as disappointed as anyone now. And if I was him, I'd be honest with you, would you sit there, and if he's not going to be happy, would you sit there and think, well, I've said time and time again that I need these players in, and you've not delivered for me over, two, three windows now. You know what? What am I supposed to do?
Well, Steve, that's not totally true. The last window, I thought they had a really good window. We could say the first window because of the embargo, yeah. And this one, definitely, Steve. But listen, this summer, they gave him pretty much everything he wanted except for a striker. They did get Chris Martin. But let's be honest here. They did have a good window over the summer.
Yeah, probably a little bit harsh there. It's just a sort of disappointment now, but I'm hoping that that's not what Jokanović feels, because if he does feel that, then, and the fact that he hasn't signed that contract yet, we could be in trouble next year, you know, with losing him and possibly some of the loanees as well. That's my fear, but you know, we'll tick on. It's still a club, and we'll come back from this no matter what, but I just hope he does stick around.
Okay. And Mike, that's the elephant in the room. You know, I wasn't prepared to talk about it, but brought it up, and I now I think we should talk about it. You know, like I said, we've been going back and forth with our group chat talking about what's been going on with Jokanović. He's on the last part of his deal here. He could walk after the season. Who knows? Maybe there's a could come in for him now. I hate to even say that. But what are your thoughts about all this? Should we be really concerned that Jokanović might leave at the end of the season, or who knows, maybe even during this season? Should we be worried?
Yeah, I totally believe that. I mean, yes, we had the chat, and you know, I've written a piece that I'm probably going to put on the website. I might have to rewrite it because we actually did sign a striker. But my feeling is, did we sort of throw in the towel? You know, have we decided that the promotion playoffs are beyond our reach and just decided not to gamble on trying to make it? Has Jokanović intimated that he's not going to stay beyond the summer? You know, if so, it sort of makes sense not to blow a load of money on players which the current manager is not interested in, when it looks like potentially the club will have to go through getting a new manager in the summer who has different ideas and different wants. But we're that close. You know, it's still getting, you know, the odds are against us making the playoffs. And three top quality players, 15 million quid, 10 million quid, you know, that kind of figure, you've looked at some of the transfers today, and, you know, they're not world beaters, but, you know, you could have gambled on some of the players, especially a couple of the young lower league strikers, just to make the squad that little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And we haven't done that. And, you know, I can see it on Twitter, probably just as you're saying, you know, everyone is throwing in the towel almost and expecting Jokanović to walk. And you know,
it's the elephant in the room, Mike. You know, I didn't want to have this conversation, but I think it's a valid conversation. Will Slavica Jokanović continue to be full manager, hopefully the rest of the season and beyond that? But this, to me, you know, doesn't bode well with what's going on here. And we have rights to be skeptical. This is all they came up with throughout the transfer window. And this is his team. I thought he had a great window. I thought the club had a great summer window. I thought they gave him pretty much everything that he wanted. But to your point, Mike, they didn't go for it here. I wasn't sure if they should gamble, but I expected more than this. This isn't enough. This isn't enough to take them over the top. So I'm worried. But that's all I'm going to say. I'm worried, and I don't blame the supporters for being worried right now.
Well, I mean, it's even, you know, I mean, we had a decent summer. We were, you know, we fell just a bit short, one player short, I always thought. And we've not really rectified that, as we were talking about earlier. But, you know, Jokanović has made enough soundings and enough comments at the end of the last window and during this window that transfers are out of his hands. The squad is playing to its absolute ability. You know, there's not much more you can get out of it. And the signing of, you know, the Greek guy and the striker today, is that going to make the difference? No, it's not. You know, these players are playing to their full potential, and that's not good enough just to, you know, at the moment. And they're a good bunch of players. They're going to work their socks off. But I just don't think it's good enough. And yes, I'm almost tempted to have a bet that Jokanović is not manager by the last game of the season, because I can see him being snapped up, because he's ambitious. He wants to be in the top league, be it here or in Spain. And he's someone who, let's be honest, we got off a team while he was under contract, so there's nothing to stop him doing it again. And if we have thrown in the towel with him and somebody comes along and says, we'll take your manager from you and we'll pay you X, then I fully expect we'll probably do that.
Oh, man. This is...
just a quick, hasn't it? I think Simon Peach tweeted out that the Kamara deal fell through at the last minute. Now, that sounds like a last-minute rush again from us. God knows, as the guys have been saying, God knows what we've been doing since the summer and all of January. But if we've then failed to sign Enrich earlier on in the evening because we've been haggling over whether to pay the $10 million up front or in instalments, then that is an absolute... you know what I'm thinking on that. Words that I don't really want to use on this as we're live, especially, and you can't edit it out. But that's an absolute, you know, if you've lost a potentially good player out of that for haggling over the fee or how you're going to pay it, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And if that ends up costing us, you know, we'll never know because you don't have a crystal ball. But if that does end up costing us, then to be honest, it's our own fault. What's 10 million when you can get 100 plus through going to the Premier League?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at Simon's tweets right now, and I've been tweeting them out as well. I'll just read them quickly before we go, guys, because I was having hope that maybe we would have some last minute news. Doesn't sound like that we're going to have the news that we want. Here are the tweets from Simon Peach before we sign off, guys. FFC move for Emian striker Abubakar Kamara has fallen through at the last minute. Details unclear, but Kamara deal didn't break down at FFC, and as far as I am aware. So that's from Simon Peach about this situation. But it's very disappointing, and the whole thing is extremely disappointing. This has been a very bad day, and I'm concerned, guys, because I've seen how well Fulham can play. How good that they could potentially be. And could this window be the cause for it all to fall apart soon? We're talking by the end of the season. Could it happen? Could this be, you know, we've watched some wonderful football, and could it all go away because of a window? And that's something that only time's going to tell, guys. All right, let's wrap this up. I'm actually pretty upset here. Mike, over to you. Final thoughts before we go.
I think I sort of said it at the last little bit I did. It's disappointing. We go on with what we've got. Maybe if we can get some results, we can get into that sixth place. But my feeling is now Jokanović is going to feel let down, and I don't expect him to be here much longer.
Okay, and that is that's. Yes,
right. Please. Just a final couple of thoughts. There are still a couple of freebies out there. I mean, obviously, Keane's still a free agent.
Right.
And something that will delight Yanis is Berbatov's also in London and is a free agent, apparently. So there's always hope, yeah.
I don't want to see Mike's head go all the way around if we sign Berbatov, because I think that's what would happen, would it, Mike?
yeah, it would do, really. Don't even go there.
Okay. All right. Steve, do you have your own final thoughts, or was that your final thoughts before we go?
That's it, really. I mean, I guess we'll never know. We could be sat here in May, and we could end up somehow doing a Watford and getting promoted. I can't see it right now, and obviously that's disappointment shining through. But who knows? You know, what could happen? You know, we might look back on this show and sort of laugh at the end of the season. And even if we did make the playoffs and lose, we still might come close. But again, that would then show that we were a little bit short. But either way, we'll just have to see what happens. But overriding at the moment is obviously a bit of disappointment.
Yeah, and that's what you're hearing from us. Listen, we hope that everything works out. We hope that they can have a good second half of the season. The second half has already begun, but let's hope that it ends well. The transfer window was a pivotal point. They did bring in a couple players, but I don't think they brought in enough. And I think it's a valid topic to talk about the future of Slavisa Jokanović in regards to what happened tonight. I do. And it seems like Mike does, and so do you, Steve. Well, Steve, I shouldn't speak for you. Do you feel like I do and like Mike does that there could be a situation now with Jokanović not getting enough to take him over the top here.
I do. I mean, I hope, I'm not saying Jokanović is an intelligent guy. I hope if he does listen to this, that he maybe gives us another, you know, maybe another shot, another year, another summer, and just see if the club will back him in this summer. Unfortunately, with the contract being up, I think if he had another year, it might be different. But the fact that his contract's up, he's now got to make that committal. Does he sign? And I just can't believe this is enough for him to do that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bad situation. This is a really bad situation because they needed to, in my opinion, they needed to show him a commitment, meaning getting him everything that he needed to succeed in the second half of the season. I think they've come short. Like you said, Mike, they have less players. They definitely have come short. And if this is the team, it's a good team, but it's a small team. And that could really come back to bite them in the second half of the season. I want to see Fulham do well. I want to see Fulham succeed, but I'm not going to hide my disappointment in what happened tonight. That's basically my final thoughts, guys. But we should really wrap this up. For Steve Lydiard and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers,
Mike.
Cheers,
thank you.
Celebrate more and spend less this holiday season with help from your neighborhood Shaw's. Shop now through Thursday and save on delicious family favorites. Stop by the meat department and get a value pack of 80% lean, fresh ground beef, $2.69 a pound. For a sweet and healthy snack, pick up Granny Smith apples or navel oranges, 99 cents a pound. And for an easy breakfast, get Kellogg's cereal select varieties, 2 for $5. Easier meals, healthier snacks, sweeter deals. Shaw's, you're in for something fresh.